Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Recommendation. Be a big thought. Hi, it's John. It's 109. You're listening to the John Williams Show. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. I appreciate you tuning in. We're here till 3 o'clock. Then Ro and Anna step in with their crew. Lots to do on the show today, including here's my recommendation that you go to my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook. There, Christmas songs that you should know about. We'll get to that in just a little bit. Richard Painter is a professor of law at the University of Minnesota, the former ethics counselor to President Bush, and we've got some questions about whether or not the president can obstruct justice. Our guest has been saying a lot about this and other things like this lately, and he joins us again on WGN. Professor Painter, it's John Williams. Welcome back. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
Can the president obstruct justice? His attorneys say no.
Of course, he can obstruct justice, and he appears to be quite good at doing it. The president has the right under the Constitution to hire and fire people in his in the White House, and to fire the FBI director if he wants. He had the right to fire James Comey. He does not have the right to fire James Comey from his directorship of the FBI in order to put a stop to the Russia investigation. That's obstruction of justice. Just as the president has the right to decide whether to sign or veto a bill, the president cannot do that in return for a payment of $100,000. That's bribery. So this notion that somehow the president is above the law, whether he obstructs justice or takes a bribe or commits any other crime in office, is patently absurd. The president is subject to the same laws that the rest of us are subject to, and if this president is obstructed justice, he's going to be shown the door and could be criminally prosecuted.
Well, that's not what Alan Dershowitz said on Fox and Friends. Can you comment a little bit on what he said about all of this?
Well, I don't want to put words into Alan Dershowitz's mouth. He appears to be taking the side of the president in just about everything these days. He is one of many people arguing that there's a very weak obstruction of justice case against the president, or perhaps that there's no such case at all. But I evidently disagreed with Alan Dershowitz on a number of subjects when we've been interviewed on TV together. One of them most recently was whether someone could be criminally prosecuted for lying to the FBI about activities that may have been legal, but you still can't lie about them. The bottom line here is that quite a few people are willing to stretch the law unreasonably to great lengths to protect President Trump. But that's not going to fly with voters. It's not flying with many Republicans, including myself. And I think we're going to have to focus on the fact that our president feels he's above the law and doesn't want to comply with the law, and we may just have to get rid of him.
I don't know that this matters so much, but you still identify as a Republican?
Yes, I do. I think we need to have two very good political parties in our country. We can't let one of them be taken over by Donald Trump with his current attitude toward authoritarian rule, or by the extremist elements that have been causing great difficulty in the Republican Party for many years. So I'd like to change the Republican Party back to its former self, where people were truly committed to small government and to efficient government, and avoided the ideological extremes, and certainly were reticent to support anything resembling authoritarian rule.
But his attorney, John Dowd, said, and this is just the quote, I'm trying to get my head around this, Trump cannot obstruct justice because he is the chief law enforcement officer under Article 2 of the Constitution and has every right to express his view of any case. So can you help me with that a little bit?
No, he absolutely has a right to express his view of a case. That's rarely done. The White House rarely gets involved in particular cases, pending at the Justice Department. But it's one thing to express his view of a case. It's another thing to fire the FBI director in order to put a stop to an investigation of known criminal activity. I mean, the Russians clearly engaged in criminal computer hacking and various other crimes inside the United States. There are a number of people contacting the Russians and collaborating with the Russians, a number of things. We don't know if those contacts were criminal or not. That's what the FBI needed to find out. But to fire the FBI director in order to just put a stop to the investigation is obstruction of justice. And at this point, it's quite clear that President Trump knew that General Flynn had lied to the FBI about his contacts with the Russians. And that's something the FBI needs to investigate.
Why do you say that? Well, why do you say, pardon me if I may, why do you say that the president clearly knew that he had fired the head of the FBI for that purpose?
Well, he said so in a tweet.
Yeah, but now you know where that is today. You know where that is today.
The lawyer is saying the lawyer drafted the tweet. Well, no competent lawyer is going to draft a tweet for his client without reviewing it with a client. Second, no competent lawyer would draft an incriminating tweet for a client at all, or recommend that a client send out an incriminating tweet. That story just doesn't hold water. President Trump's been handling his own Twitter for quite some time. If there were a halfway decent, level-headed lawyer involved with the president's Twitter account, we wouldn't have most of the stuff coming out of there that's coming out of there.
Yeah, well,
he's an impulsive tweeter, and he's tweeted himself into an obstructive justice charge.
Mr. Painter, the conversation we had here yesterday was maybe it doesn't matter who wrote the tweet if it reflects the views of the president. That is, who cares whose thumbs were on the phone when it went out if that reflects the president's actions or views? That's what's most germane here. But they're denying that. They're saying, regardless of who wrote the tweet, you're misinterpreting what happened if you read that to mean that he fired him because he was working on the investigation. So they can say and do one thing, and then if it later turns out to be problematic, they simply say, well, that's not what we meant.
Yes, well, that tweet was about the firing of General Flynn. So he did know, President Trump knew at the time that Flynn had lied to the FBI. Now, as for the firing of James Comey, which is the center of the obstruction of justice charge, the president confessed to right there in the Oval Office with a Russian ambassador sitting there. He said he had fired James Comey.
Yeah.
And there was this Russia investigation going on. It's pretty obvious that he fired James Comey to put a stop to the Russia investigation. And that's obstruction of justice.
So then what is the consequence of that? Say you can make that case, then is that the sort of thing that the president would be brought up on criminal charges, or is that the sort of thing that the president would be impeached for?
Well, the first step is to convene the House and Senate Judiciary Committee. That's what happened when I was about 10 or 11 years old, and we had this situation with Richard Nixon. And by the time I was 12 years old, he'd been thrown out of office, forced to resign. But the House and Senate Judiciary Committee were convening, and they had a lot less evidence against Richard Nixon at the point they had those hearings than there is now with respect to President Trump and numerous violations of the Constitution. So where this is with Congress. That's where this ought to be taken up, and that's where we ought to be talking to Eric Paulson, Jason Lewis, and our other representatives from Minnesota about whether they're going to do their job. And Tom Emmer and the rest of them, they either want to do their job or they ought to hightail on out of there.
Yeah. Well, those are your Republican officials, elected officials, members of Congress in Minnesota. We have some in Illinois as well. I haven't heard any groundswell of support for that on the Republican side.
Yeah, what's going on is that the White House has let Republicans know that if they dare to oppose President Trump, they're going to get some challenge in a primary from some right-wing nut that, Steve Bannon or somebody backs, find some Roy Moore with the cowboy hat, the gun, and the Bible, and preferably without the teenage girls and all that, and they're going to come in and go after you at the primary. And so everybody's scared to death of getting primaried from the right, and so all they want to do is keep their head down. And that's been the problem with our Minnesota delegation, and that may very well be the problem you've got in Illinois. I used to work quite a bit with the Illinois Republican Party when I lived down there, and I think it's a big problem that the White House has so much influence over over what happens at the local level, because these people are supposed to represent us, not Donald Trump.
We got 60 seconds left. The president is also saying, or has famously said, that if the investigation crosses into his finances, then that's the wrong side of the red line. Is Mueller okay in your estimation in looking into the president's finances, and what recourse would the president have if he doesn't like that?
Of course, he ought to look into the finances, where the money is coming from. Is the president of the United States or anybody else I have in this administration financially dependent on the Russians? We have a right to know that. That's an issue of critical importance to our national security. Nobody would have argued about that at all a number of years ago. The idea of someone getting money from the Russians and us not knowing about it, critically importance. So Bob Mueller ought to chase that down and find out what's going on at Deutsche Bank and make sure that that money was Deutsche Bank money rather than rubles in, dollars out. That's Mueller's job. If President Trump chooses to fire Robert Mueller, there's going to be a real uproar over that. We went through that when Nixon firing the special prosecutor, and that's not going to fly so well.
It's 1:20. Anything else you want to say to us today, Richard Painter?
Well, I do hope that the members of Congress who represent us, of both political parties, will hold this administration accountable. I'm particularly worried about the Republicans because over the long term, if we as Republicans can't be trusted to make sure that the president obeys the Constitution, I don't think the voters are going to be willing to send very many Republicans to Congress. So it's critically important for the survival of the Republican Party to stand up to President Trump, and critically important for the country that we all do.
Professor Painter, thanks for joining us. We'll visit again.
Yep. Thank you.
He's a professor of law at the University of Minnesota. He was the ethics counselor to President Bush and legal advisor to the Bush administration, and still is a member of the Republican Party, though he doesn't like everything he sees. Paul Stokes is in our studio. Hi, Paul. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Long time no see. You been good?
Yes, sir.
Paul works with the folks at Angelica's Bakery because it's his bakery. Actually, it's his auntie's bakery. Am I right?
No, my mother.
Your mother's bakery. Yeah. And we met you famously when Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update said things are going so crazy in the world, everybody should just eat sheet cake.
Absolutely.
They said preferably a minority or Jewish-owned, or was it women? I think it was Jewish or minority-owned.
Jewish or minority-owned bakery, yes.
You have the bit, Elif? Okay, here's what got us. Here's how we met you.
I would urge people this Saturday, instead of participating in the screaming matches and potential violence, find a local business you support, maybe a Jewish-run bakery or an African-American-run bakery. Order a cake with the American flag on it, like this one, and just eat it, Colin.
And she dives into the dang thing. Tina Fey on Weekend Update after Charlottesville. And so we said, okay, let's go. So right. we found you guys and ordered some cake. And I've been ordering cake ever since.
But, I mean, you haven't gained not a pound. So,
no, I have not.
Our cakes are pound free.
You lie on the radio, sir. Here's how you don't gain a little bit of weight if you order their cakes. Give a lot of it away. Because, and in fact, I said, well, so how you been? I just wanted to catch up with you. It turns out, and I didn't know why I invited you, but cakes are in the news again. There's that story of the people that are super Christian, and they don't support the LGBTQ community. And so there's a Supreme Court is going to decide if the bakers have to bake cakes for gay couples that want to get married. So cakes are in the news again. Wow. I don't suppose you want to comment on that in any way.
I think I'll pass.
Attaboy.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing. Really, if I was a business, uh-huh, I would want all customers I wouldn't want any customers to know how I feel about an issue because I just want to make cakes.
Right, right.
I just want to make, you know, cinnamon rolls or whatever it is that you folks make. I just want stuff to go out the door. And if I stick a flag on either side, then maybe the people on the other side ain't going to come to my store. That's not good for business.
No, it's not. And so I guess as a business owner, you can't be one side of the aisle or the other. You have to, you know. Michael Jordan said famously that, you know, Republicans buy shoes too. So, but yeah, we sell to
anybody that comes in the
anybody
door.
Anybody that comes in the door, it doesn't
make
matter.
A cake. Yeah. So I said, what should I order now? And you said German chocolate cake. Why did you say German chocolate cake?
Probably that's only second only to our caramel cake as far as popularity. No.
The caramel cake was something you introduced me to and said is well known in the South.
Yes.
I had never heard of it. I mean, caramel icing on a white cake, right?
Then
all of a sudden, I'm like a convert. That was really spectacular.
Yeah, you're a caramel fan now.
I truly am. And then you said your number two is the German chocolate cake. What's that all about?
Well, it's German chocolate. You've heard of German chocolate
before.
But it's the cake batter. And then we make our own German chocolate icing, which includes coconuts and walnut.
Yeah.
And so we still, of course, doing all that by hand. And so, of course, I brought you one.
Yeah.
And it's fresh. And I know you said you're not a real big fan of coconut, but I think you'll like this.
Well, as a kid growing up, German chocolate was my birthday cake. That would be my first choice.
Oh, okay.
And then I kind of fell away from it. I don't know what happened, but maybe it's time for me to come back, re-embrace the German chocolate cake.
Come back to the light.
But then I just wanted a good old-fashioned white cake with some white icing and some flowers.
Right.
And I said, could you do it in like a Christmas style?
And we did that.
That's over here.
You had originally told the bakery that you wanted cream cheese, but you being my new best friend, I decided.
I knew. I want the buttercream.
Right, you wanted the buttercream. So I got you a buttercream cake with the icing, happy holidays, red and green, all that stuff.
Right. So if somebody wants to order a cake for a special occasion between now and Christmas, I'm highly recommending these things.
Right. Yeah.
Take a picture of it and put it on our website, and I'll tweet it out here in just a little bit as well. How's business been, by the way?
Business was good. For Thanksgiving.
Where are you located, by the way? Angelica's.
17535 Hazelcrest, Illinois. 17535 Kedzie, Hazelcrest, Illinois, south suburbs of Chicago.
So how's business?
It was good for Thanksgiving. There was a lot of demand. We unfortunately had to cut our staff from last year. We were running three shifts, so we're only running two now. Went from 70-something employees to 33. But our employees worked very hard to make sure everyone was able to get their products.
Why'd you have to cut staff?
The economy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the
really?
Economy,
not many people are buying cakes, but the economy's coming around. Do you expect the cake orders are going to come around? What is your thought about
that? It has picked up a lot for starting at the end of October. It has picked up for us. So,
you know, the reason we first found you is because you're a quote-unquote minority-owned business. Is it mostly minorities that work in your business?
Yes. Huh. Yes, we do have a lot of minorities. And it's all thanks to my mom, Bobby. You know, she started this out of basement, and she employs some employees who are hard to employ at other places, and she brings them in and train them. So it's all on her. You know, I'm just a...
So you got 33 people working there?
33, yes.
By the way, you could have kept that third shift if you didn't have to keep bringing John free cakes?
Speak up, sir. See, the voice that you just heard came from the little corner on that TV. That's our newsman, Steve Bertrand. Say hi, Steve.
Hello.
Hey, Steve.
Tell him about these cakes.
Tell Steve?
No. Yeah, tell Steve.
Oh, but Steve, he did purchase them.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he did purchase
Take
them.
All the time you want to talk about them.
Steve, and you know, never mind the 75% discount that we gave him.
I did not ask for a 75% discount.
No, he paid full price, Steve.
That's the second fake news you've put on this show. I just want to mention one other thing about our friend Paul Stokes, who came in from Angelica's Bakery. It's in Hazelcrest. We met him some time ago, and we just like to stay in touch with his business and see how things are going, and then give him money, and then he delivers cakes. This is something evidently alien to the newsroom, where they just think, it happens by magic. They don't know evidently enough about how commerce works.
Wait for you to give Paul money, and then I eat the cakes.
That's why you're in the newsroom. You're smarter than me. So folks want to order your delicious product, 708-206-0970,
correct.
Right? 708-206-0970. The German chocolate cake feels perfect for the holidays to me.
This is a huge seller.
A little more substantial, a little richer, special maybe for folks.
Yes. It goes well with ice cream too.
Did folks, last time you were on, your phone was ringing from GN listeners, as I understand.
They were. And to the ones who came in during Thanksgiving, they probably had never seen a crowd like that. So I apologize if you weren't able to get service as soon as possible. But I appreciate your business. And because of your business, we'd like to offer any WGN listener who comes in this week and mention the John Williams show on WGN AM.
Yeah, don't mention the other shows. Mention John Williams,
WGN. It has
WGN.
To be John Williams. We'll give you a free cupcake with your purchase.
Free cupcake. That's at Angelica's Bakery, 708-206-0970. And their address on Kedzie and Hazelcrest is
17535 Kedzie Avenue.
17535
Hazelcrest, Illinois. Yeah.
Angelica's. Angelica's.com? Angelica'sBakery.com?
Angelica'sCakes.com.
Angelica'sCakes.com. That's nice. See, by the way, do you take the L much?
I haven't taken the L since high school.
I take it almost every day. So yeah. Listen to this. I get on the L today. This ticks me off. And they say, Steve, do you know anything about what happened on the blue, brown, purple, and red lines today?
I don't, John.
Well, listen to this, Steve. This may be news. So I get on the L, and we sit there, and they say, we're sorry, everybody, but there's been a delay. Mm-hmm. The train in front of us has stopped. Well, that happens. Usually there for 30 seconds or a minute, and then it goes on. Then the guy comes on and goes, there's a technical problem with the trains, and so our train can't move until the trains in front of us get going. We're sorry, we're cool with that. And then he comes back on. He goes, guess what? It's not a problem with the trains in front of us. It's the whole dang system. They have a tower, and it's switching and electronics. And there's engineers that are on the way to that, and we're going to be here for a while. Wow. And then they come on, and they go, we don't think in your lifetime these trains will ever run again. You will age and die in this car if you don't get out. So we're all like, ah, crap. And everybody stands up, and we all mosey out.
All right.
So now we got to go grab a bus, Uber, cab, whatever. And I've been to this movie before. That happens sometimes. But here's the thing. The car was full. All of us paid full freight to get on that car. When you exit, they're not giving you little vouchers redeeming you for the purchase. Can anybody help me with that? Don't you think they should redeem us, give us a voucher, or find some way to make up for the... Now, I know if I'd stayed on that train car, eventually it would have rolled. But again, maybe not in my lifetime. So don't you think they should be giving us a voucher for getting off?
They should have. Yeah, I would think that someone should have at least said, you know, been at the door to at least apologize and say, you know, your next trip or your next train ride is on us. But
and I don't know,
especially for the inconvenience.
And I don't know exactly how they do that, because some people had recently exited another train and they would be coming down the same steps I am. We could all claim that we were denied passage on the new train, when in fact it was some people who were getting off a different one and were fine. I don't know what their solution to that is, but they didn't seem to have any interest in compensated. What's a train ride cost? It's $2-3 something.
No, John,
like that.
Last time I was on a bus or a train, there was a little paper.
I know.
I don't think they even have those
little
now.
I still have some of those in my ticket, and I still have some of these from way back when. I found some, and I looked at them, and they were looking at those things like hieroglyphics. They're like, we have no idea what these are. They mean nothing to us. Fine. Just text to 312-981-7200 and help a fella out. Or you can call that number. But am I wrong? Did I miss something here? Is there a way that they are in fact compensating people? And I didn't know, because everybody just kind of got up in a huff and we all streamed out, and there was no interest or no expectation from the exiting passengers that we would in any way be made whole. And I think if you pay for a service that you don't get, they owe you something.
I agree.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll keep buying your cakes.
Okay.
Nice to see you, Paul. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, John.
312-981-7200 if you can help a fellow out. Talking to my producer, Olive. You know that story about that suburban bus company that has transportation between the suburbs and the University of Illinois at Champaign-Urbana? And they run people back and forth, students back and forth. It's a great service to have, right? And so then they ran an ad online, and it said, if you sign up with us, it won't be like one of those Chinese buses or trains. You'll be able to sit with people that look like you. Well, that was a bad idea, particularly since there was that horrible tragedy involving a Chinese exchange student at the Champaign-Urbana campus. But even beside that, that's just such a bad way to position yourself. And so they apologize for it and explain it, but I think the faster they danced, the worse it got. And my attitude about that was, well, you guys will just suffer the consequences. It's the marketplace. But now Lisa Madigan's office is saying that they're going to look into that. And I'm not exactly sure what the law is that you would be breaking. Is that some discrimination or something like that? I'm not exactly sure what it is that Lisa Madigan's office has to do with that, but she may be able to join us a little after two. It was a really bizarre story. And they said that there was another transportation company which was taking all of the Chinese students around. And so, in fact, they didn't have the Chinese students. They had the white students, I guess. I'm filling in a lot of gaps here. And they also said, and besides, the University of Illinois has a lot of Chinese students. And I just keep thinking, you guys have to stop talking about the Chinese students right now. But they say like 20% of the undergraduates at the U of I are from China. And that's why they have all the Chinese students. And I'm like, A, who cares? You should want purple people if they pay full freight. You really shouldn't be caring. This is not a marketing point for you. I talked to them off the air yesterday, and I said, well, just come on and explain that to us. And they sort of hung up on me. So I don't know exactly why they did that, to be honest with you. I think I would have given them a fair shake. At least that's what I told them. I didn't seem to be so interested. Also, Troy Turner will join us after the top of the hour. He's the editor of that newspaper in Alabama who said, if we endorse Roy Moore's opponent, and that's who you are, his name is Jones, but really you're Roy Moore's opponent, there will be bullet holes in this building.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Here's my thought.
Here's John Williams.
Give to my friends at the Salvation Army. 208, this is John. I have a virtual kettle on my Facebook page. I hope you go there. I'm King John on Facebook.
Oh, have mercy.
And we're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. The sun is streaming in through our showcase windows. On the one. And a two. And a three. So 9 different women have accused Roy Moore of having some sort of relationship or contact with them when they were teenagers. Or 9 different women, 5 were teenagers at the time. Debbie Wesson Gibson said she was 17 years old when she had a relationship with Roy Moore. At the time, he was 34 years old, twice her age. She said that they kissed consensually, and then she went off eventually to college. But she said that when the news came out that he said, I don't know who any of these women are, she said, wait a minute, we dated for a couple of months there when I was 17. I sure as heck remember. In fact, she said, look here, you signed my graduation card from high school. I don't know much about this man's handwriting, but it seems to be consistent with all of the signatures I've seen of him the last few weeks on TV. But Roy Moore continues to say that none of that happened, and over 70% of the Republicans in that state so far say they believe him. The interesting thing is that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and President Trump via his own Twitter account, and for that matter, Kellyanne Conway and Sarah Sanders, all were saying that he should drop out of the race. Now all are saying that the voters of Alabama should decide, or in fact that they flat out endorse him. They made a switcheroo, maybe because as the election gets closer, the polling is closer. It appears right now that if the polls are to be believed, that Roy Moore would win the election and would go on to the United States Senate. About that, Mitch McConnell has been asked, what would happen then? Would you all seat him or try and make efforts to unseat him? And he said, well, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. There was an editorial in a newspaper in Alabama, and it's sort of gained fame because there the editor, a guy named Troy Turner, said that if we endorse Jones, what's Jones's first name, Steve Bertrand, his opponent, if we endorse that guy, there'd be bullet holes in this building. Which makes you worry about a lot of things, doesn't it? In his editorial, he said, the damage is done. When the situation is so bad that it unites opposing political voices during an era of rigid political divide, think about that. It's so bad, even people in this day and age who disagree at least agree on this. He wrote, it leaves little doubt what should come next. Roy Moore should withdraw from the U.S. Senate. The guy that wrote that, Troy Turner, is on phone and joins us now on WGN. Troy, it's John Williams. Welcome to Chicago and WGN. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Having heard me say all of that, what do you want to say now?
Well, obviously it's interesting times for the state of Alabama. It's you can see it across the country. It's a reflection of many things, but here it's obviously grown deeper. And with the recent charges against Roy Moore, I mean, it's a tough thing because a lot of voters are kind of confused and don't know what to do in a very conservative state many of them want to do the right thing, but at the same time, the national media is something that they're very resistant to, and they have a very big distrust. And so many people are either not believing of the reports and the allegations and thinking it's a trumped-up campaign to oust Roy Moore, or they're so adamant about things with the different party platforms that they want to have a Republican in there, and they think it's the lesser of two evils. So it's not the best situation for our political atmosphere on the state level or national level, because we're talking about a United States future senator here.
Are you also saying, though, that the voters might be more inclined to vote for Moore or believe Moore just to thumb their nose at the New York Times or the Democratic Party or the liberal elite media, that sort of thing?
I think it's just a matter of that distrust. I mean, they honestly believe that there are campaigns that use the media to their benefit, and they very much believe the national media is on the Democratic side of the party aisle. So there, a lot of people like that style that Roy Moore has, and that's the reason why Trump is so popular here. They like that, say what he feels like. But at the same time, and this is what concerns us and what led to the editorial, we need to get beyond that, folks. We need to get into the issues. We need to see the purpose in our editorial was mainly not so much as which party. We need to get into these issues. We need to find out who is going to best not represent Alabama, but also the United States and that Senate when it comes to all these various issues. And we need, the bottom line is, we need integrity restored in the offices of the leadership for the state of Alabama for certain. There have been a lot of problems here with politics over the last few years. Governor had to resign. He was accused of scandals and had an affair. The Speaker of the House, the state Speaker of the House, was convicted on ethics charges. And then the other of the big three, our Supreme Court justice, was Roy Moore, and twice he was removed from office. So our point is integrity needs to be restored. So is the best shot at integrity Roy Moore with these allegations, or is it Doug Jones, a Democrat? And the first thing a lot of voters look at there is, okay, well, I'm not going to vote for something, anybody in Democratic platform. For one thing, they support abortion. Well, you know, that's a platform, and a lot of people are saying we got to choose the lesser of two evils. But there, how do you measure that, and how do you respond to that? I mean, it's just there are a lot of things there that need straightening out in our political system.
Troy Turner is the editor of the Opelika, is that the name of the town?
Opelika, Auburn.
Opelika, Auburn.
I'm familiar with Auburn, yeah.
So where are you located?
East Central Alabama. We're only about an hour or less from the Georgia line in East Central Alabama, and mostly this area is known for Auburn University. Opelika is the sister city next to it, a little more blue-collar, and Auburn's got the university there. So the Twin City area, Opelika, is the name for that city.
Say hello to my newsman, Steve Bertrand.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Steve.
Hello. I'm just wondering, you know, what it is about Doug Jones that people can't bring themselves to vote for. And you kind of moved toward there, your last answer. Is it the Democratic label, or is it he has personal abortion positions, right, that make it tough down there?
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, to answer your question in a nutshell, it's because he's a Democrat, for one thing. Doug Jones is actually a nice guy, and I think the ironic thing is that a lot of people who actually know him or have met him or have heard enough about him feel like he's done some good work with the civil rights movements in the past. He's a well-respected man just for his own personal character and morals, and a lot of people have said that about Doug Jones and still said, I'm going to vote for Roy Moore because I just can't elect a Democrat.
Let me ask an ignorant question. Yeah. Does his fighting in those civil rights cases hurt him with some voters in Alabama? Because that's what a lot of us in the North think.
I know, and that's a reputation that's going to take a long time for Alabama to recover, and things like this certainly set it back and don't help that. I think he's got a lot of folks who think of him as a hero for that reason, but I can't sit here and say that there's not some who resent him for that. So there's some old school thoughts there, but I think Alabama's progressed. I'll say this: I do not think that is an issue between these two candidates for this office.
Right.
I do not think that's holding him back. I think it's purely comes down to the Democrat platform and the things that Democrats believe on the national scale compared to what Republicans do. And this is a very Republican conservative state, and they're scared of a Democrat. They're scared of a Democrat majority in the Senate, and they know that there's national importance with this office.
I'm a little confused, though. I mean, you'd previously said to another publication that if you endorsed Jones, there'd be bullet holes in the building. But this isn't an endorsement of Roy Moore. You're in fact saying they should vote for Jones because the damage is done.
Well, the approach in the article, that was a Washington Post. It was a column in there, and that was kind of a figure of speech about the bullet holes. I don't really literally think somebody will be shooting in my office, but the point is the passion is that much here. There is that much passion here. Our editorial, by policy before this race, long before it, the company policy here was not to do endorsements. But we felt like when these allegations broke, not only that, the national scale, national Republicans were saying, we can't work with this guy. Even if you do bring him here, we're going to kick him out. So our point was, we've got to have somebody in that office who can represent the state. So we did not go so far as to endorse Doug Jones, but we did say that we thought that Roy Moore should step down.
Right.
And we thought
right.
he should withdraw because we think there needs to be effectiveness in that office, and we did not think he could bring that kind of competency and effectiveness to the office.
I don't know that you or people down there should care, but it's sort of like my friend Steve Bertrand said here a moment ago. You know, in Chicago and Milwaukee and Seattle, people are kind of scratching their head. What's the matter with the people of Alabama?
I can understand that. People in Alabama are scratching their head and saying, what's the matter with Alabama? it's a confusing time because these charges are serious.
And do you believe the charges? Do you believe the charges, Troy?
Personally, I don't want to get into what I believe because I'm a news guy who's sitting here trying to report both sides on the opinions. I think there's some merit to it, and I think there's some things there that I'll put it this way. I trust some of the reporters and editors at the Washington Post. I know they do good work, and if they went out and found folks who are saying some of these things, I believe that some of the charges deserve more attention, deserve more investigation, and should be considered very legitimate. At the same time, I also understand why many Alabamians believe some of these charges could be false,
mm-hmm.
because I've seen and heard of examples where they feel like they were manipulated to say a certain thing.
Well, let me ask you this.
Personally, I think...
Go ahead.
Pardon?
No.
Personally, I think it's a problem that is serious enough, and the allegations are serious enough that they should be taken seriously on all levels, and I can understand why people are reacting the way they are.
Yeah. Was he banned from a mall down there?
That's what they say about his time in Gadsden. Gadsden's an hour or two up the road from the Auburn area, but I don't know if he's actually banned, but there was a lot of talk that there was a lot of talk about scuttlebutt being around that town and people saying it was common knowledge that there was an issue there.
How was he held in regard, what kind of regard, when he was removed from the judicial position two times? I mean, was he then ridiculed, or were people rallying to support then?
Both. See, it brings a tough dilemma because you've got on the one side a very conservative state. You've got a lot of people who really appreciate a hero who's going to stand up for the Ten Commandments and the Christian ideals that the Bible Belt is very strong and passionate about. At the same time, you've got a lot of folks on the other side of the coin who are saying, yeah, that's great. Yeah, we believe in that too. But Alabama needs to be progressive. We're going after an aviation industry. Huntsville's got NASA, Airbus. I mean, there are a lot of good things going on that is a very progressive sign for the state of Alabama. And they see this as a very serious setback, and it is. This has really done a lot of harm to
Alabama. I was thinking about that, Troy. I mean, look what happened to North Carolina when they were on the wrong side of the LGBTQ business. The NCAA and other organizations and companies said, we won't have anything to do with y'all. And I thought, if your state wants to modernize or attract major employers, fairly or not, this paints your state as really backwards on something like this.
It does, and that's why there are a lot of people who are in Doug Jones's corner, not just because of some of the other normal politics of things, but just because they see him as a candidate who can bring that kind of respect to the office when Roy Moore cannot. On the other side, look who just came out in Roy Moore's corner again, you know, our president. So in a lot of ways, Roy Moore's campaign mirrors Trump's so many details, so many ways. And if you like Trump and you like that style, you like Roy Moore. If you don't like Trump and you're completely against him and everything he does and stands for, it's kind of going to be the same way with Roy Moore. And so there's a lot of reflection on the national scene.
Well, I'm just talking
about the image of Alabama.
I'm just talking to the well, thank you for that. I'm just talking to the wind here. But it seems to me like if you like that style, I think a lot of us would find that refreshing. But if in that style you say things that are reprehensible, President Trump or Roy Moore, then at least I should have enough of a wit to say I'll not endorse you. I appreciate your style, but what matters more is what you're saying with it. And if you're saying some things that, you know, most of us couldn't accept, then like I said, I'm just talking to myself here. But I do have a question about the women themselves and what sort of relationship he did or did not have with them. And it's just a couple quick, simple questions. Troy Turner is that newspaper editor you may have heard about who wrote a really thoughtful, some say courageous, editorial in the Opelika Auburn News about Roy Moore. And we're just finishing a conversation with him about what's going on down there. Do you have a sense of which way this election is going to go, if it were today or when it happens later in the month, Troy?
I still believe Roy Moore, believe it or not, has the lead. I know the polls are close with everything they're getting back. But I'll say this, all of this that's happened with the allegations, as well as Roy Moore's own past with having been removed from office twice, a lot of people thought he was being opportunistic, kind of jumping on a soapbox there and just the old populist style of taking charge, jumping in front of a parade, basically. And a lot of people resented that. When I was talking earlier about some in Alabama trying hard for that progressive look instead of the step back. So all of that to say, there are a lot of voters who have swung over to Doug Jones and the Democratic side. And I do think it's going to be a lot closer than a lot of people thought. The Democrats like to think that they've got a real chance to win this. However, the gut feeling and the mood on the street tends to tell me that it's still Roy Moore's to lose.
Time is on whose side in this case?
It's the acceptance and moving on without solid proof on the allegations of Roy Moore seems to suggest it's on his side.
Yeah.
That would be my personal opinion, because people keep saying, well, prove it, prove it, prove it. And, of course, part of the problem there is Roy Moore won't show up to testify or do anything like that. There's been no commitment on his side to say, yeah, I'll put that aside, I'll take a polygraph, I'll do this or I'll do that. There's been no effort to do that. On the other hand, I mean, it's kind of hard to prove actual evidence in some of these kind of cases. And so it's a tough situation.
Sure looks like his signature on that woman's graduation card. She was 17. He was 34.
Yeah. And, you know, the Post did a lot of work. Like I said earlier in the show, I have a lot of respect for, as a journalist, I'm a journalist, and I know the editor. I know the columnist who wrote the column. I respect what they do there. So for them to say they sought out, they found these folks, and they feel like they've got a lot of confidence in their story. Keep in mind, it's not just their stories, but the Post actually went to the effort of proving some other details, like one said she was in a court case the same day that, and in the courthouse there. They went back and found the court records to show that, yes, indeed, she was there that day. So, I mean, yeah, there is a lot of evidence, or circumstantial evidence anyway, and a lot of the allegations that deserve second thought. But Alabamians, again, sometimes feel like that's a media trying to manipulate this because there's more at stake than just what there is for Alabama.
This texter says, personally, we will not be staying in Alabama this winter. Perhaps if enough people keep their money out of the state, they'll see the errors of their way. Have you heard anything like that, either from individual citizens or companies?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's not from companies. I think there are a lot of good things, like I mentioned earlier, that are happening here. And it's unfortunate that this is the kind of thing, because you're looking at a senator is supposed to be somebody who's a leader in bringing that progress and bringing those jobs, which is part of the reason why we wrote the original editorials asking him to step down when we thought he'd be ineffective.
Yeah.
We need somebody who's going to help do what a senator's supposed to do for their state. Yeah, they have national obligations, but for their home state, what do senators do? They help bring jobs. They help look for those type of things. And is Roy Moore going to be able to do that, or is Doug Jones going to be able to do that?
This texter says, how about not voting for Roy Moore because he won't uphold the Constitution? I presume that's a shot at his standing by Christian values, the Ten Commandments, that sort of thing, as opposed to what the Supreme Court says is the law of the land.
Yeah.
Do we understand that correctly? Could just as you go, just give me a sense of where he is on that pivot
point.
Well,
he's a person who puts his personal moral beliefs ahead of what he thinks. If he thinks those beliefs are more correct and the moral argument outweighs the legal argument, that's where he's going to go. And a lot of people ask here, well, is he doing that because he honestly believes in that and he's a man of principle and he's a hero for that? Or is this his way of being a populist leader and getting elected? And so there's that debate. But again, going back to our original editorial, we need a senator who's going to be able to keep the job. He didn't keep the job in the state Supreme Court. Can he keep the job in the Senate? So that's one of the things that's a challenge for him.
The Opelika Auburn News, Opelika, Opelika Auburn News. The editor there is a guy named Troy Turner. What a pleasure to talk to you today, Troy. Let's visit again. Good luck to you all down there. We appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Merry Christmas.
Do you have a favorite Christmas song or Christmas album, Steve?
Wow, you know, I think I don't like Christmas music. It's funny, I can't get into it.
Well, it's been warm, and we've all been sort of distracted by the various kinds of news.
It's all sounding the same. You know, I like Harry Connick. He had a Christmas song about only 20 years ago.
Okay, this is from an album by a group called The Blenders.
Those are your boys.
Yeah, I wrote about this on Facebook. I wrote this. We're planning our Christmas specials here at WGN Radio, and I'm going to include some Christmas music in my hour, and I need some help. Here's why. I was playing a song from one of my favorite Christmas albums the other day, and my son just shook his head and said, I'm not ready for this yet. Seems that we don't agree on what makes a great holiday hit. Now, I know these choices are very personal, but if we can come to some sort of consensus, I'll play that song on my Christmas special on my show.
There's a Pretender song, I think, 2,000 Miles from Home.
See, there you go. If we don't come to some consensus, but I discover a real hidden gem, I'll feature that. So the question I post is, what Christmas song would you like to hear me play on December 25th? I then included album art from a Sufjan Stevens Songs for Christmas LP, but that's not the one I just now featured or the one my son and I were disagreeing about. My family doesn't like The Blenders as much as I do, but it's such a personal thing. There's no right or wrong answer, although they're wrong in this case, but everybody gets to have their favorite songs and albums and Christmas artists. I mean, back in the day, the Osmonds. The Osmonds have a double album set. Albums are pieces of plastic with little grooves in them. Anyway, the Osmonds have a great Christmas album. And, you know, who doesn't like Nat King Cole, for crying out loud? Johnny Mathis. Shoot, just give me the Johnny Mathis album. I'm good to go.
I used to love Vince Guaraldi, but then everyone else did too. And
we've kind of ruined the Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack in this country, that's for sure. And yet when it comes on, I'm not going to turn it off, but it doesn't seem so go-to now. James Taylor has a nice Christmas album. Anyway, so... on my Facebook page, we now have this comment section that's just a stream of great videos and suggestions. So go there, listen there, and post there. Todd Stroger, the former Cook County Board President, is on the phone. Todd, jump in here. Do you want to add something to our Christmas list that you'd recommend?
Well, I think Steve hit a really good one. That Harry Connick album was really good. And, you know, I'm an older guy, so I love the Temptation Silent Night.
Nice.
See
nice.
That? Stroger's with me.
Yeah. Todd, you were on our studio a week ago, and we're going to run for county board president. What are you doing now?
Well, you know, we went out and I had some great volunteers, and they worked really hard, and we collected enough signatures to that was required. They required a little over 8,000. But in this rough and tumble city, you need to get at least twice as many. And we just didn't have enough time. I'd say another 2 weeks, we could have gotten at least 16,000.
Is that what you need? Wait, you need 16,000 signatures to run?
No, you need 8,000. But you need like 16,000 because they're going to knock off a lot of them.
Oh,
you
know, I see.
Most of the people you talk to, they may think they're registered, but they're not. So
I see. So you said, okay, I can't get in on that. So, well, sorry for you. Sorry for the people that might have voted for you. So what's your plan now?
Well, if you remember, I was running for Water Reclamation Commissioner initially. So I was out collecting those signatures 5 weeks ago. So we filed for that yesterday.
How many signatures do you need for that?
Surprisingly, you need a little more than 8,000.
Wait. Well, but so then don't you need 16,000 water reclamation signatures?
No, we probably filed more like 13,000, but the scrutiny is not quite the same.
For water. Well, see, here's the deal, Todd. Nobody grew up someday wanting to be a water reclamation district representative. What is that?
Well, it's actually very important. It's really part of the public health system. It started, I forgot exactly, but somewhere around 1880 or something. It was called the Sanitary District. If you ever saw the documentary on Chicago, you would have seen that at some point the river was burning. And that's because the meat packers would throw the carcasses and all the waste in the river, and one day it caught on fire. So they started the sanitary district to protect the water. And now it's a little different. All the sewer water goes down there, everything that goes down your toilet or your sink, and their job is to clean it and toss it back in the river.
Hmm. So I've never thought about this. So say you and I are running for water reclamation district representative, is that what you are? Commissioner? What would it be?
Commissioner.
And what would a platform be besides I really want clean water? Like, because I'm going to say that too. So what would be a distinguishing characteristic of a water reclamation district commissioner?
Well, actually, there's so much that's going on with water nowadays. I used to work there. Maybe, I guess that's been about 30 years ago. Oof, that's a long time. And now they've improved what they did with water, so it's like 99% clean. But they also work with things like flooding. So they have, I forgot what they call that, but they work with the public schools and the parks, and they will build playgrounds. And what they'll do is they'll make a reservoir underneath the playground to help alleviate flooding.
I see.
Yes, they and when I was with them, they were always trying to make soil, but they never could get the minerals and such out. So they'd grow a tomato, but it'd be full of iron or something like that. Well, technology is the greatest thing in the world, and nowadays they actually sell biosoil, which you could take and, you know, make a garden.
Right, yeah, sure, put in your backyard. So,
yeah.
All right, so you're running for this office. Is it one specific slot, and who's your opponent?
Well, the strangest thing has happened in the last, I guess, maybe 6 years. Usually, everyone runs countywide, and it's a whole group of people, and the voters get to pick three
right.
out of whatever the group is.
Right.
In this instance, one of the commissioners resigned. So there was this is like a special election for that position. This is only a 2-year spot. And it appears that there's only one other candidate. So it's really going to just be me and the young lady.
I see. And what does this position pay?
Somewhere around 77, I believe.
Steve Bertrand's in the WGN Radio newsroom.
Mr. Strozier, then, I just wonder, are you going to work for or are you going to work against Tony Preckwinkle in the Cook County Board President's race?
I certainly won't be working for, and I don't know who will be running. I guess Bob Fioretti is the only person who actually filed. I'll have to talk to Bob and see what his plans are. And if he asks me, then I might work with him.
Okay. Steve, I'm more interested in the water reclamation stuff.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to distract
county
you.
County board
there.
Stuff.
It is very important, though.
Steve doesn't care about the
water. I do care.
He doesn't even care about the biosoil or any of that stuff. All right. Well, so when is this election coming up? Has that been in the papers or anything? When are we going to vote for this, Todd?
We all need to get ready for March 20th, so it's a long time away, actually.
All right. Well.
And there's going to be a lull because, you know, the holidays come.
Yeah.
Then it's freezing for a while. And
right.
Then people
freezes.
Really start start doing things, except for J.B. Pritzker. I'm sure he'll be running commercials
yeah.
all the way.
Yeah, he's got all. He'll just go downstairs, make some more, come on up, and just spend it on radio
yeah.
commercials.
I believe so.
In the meantime, have a good holiday. If I don't talk
thank
to
you,
you between now and Christmas, and we'll visit again down the road.
All right. Thank you.
Set the night wind to the little land. Do you see what I see?
Is this the Carpenter's version of it?
Yes.
Said what Christmas songs, albums, artists do you really like? A few of you said the Carpenters. A lot of folks like Pentatonix. Mary, did you know? Little Perry Como ain't all bad. Home for the Holidays. Here, let's just play one more, though, just to show you the range. So some of it is traditional stuff like that. But if you ask me, I see Kevin's in the sports booth over there. I'm not sure if he's listening right now. Kevin, do you have a go-to favorite Christmas album, artist, or song?
You know, I like the old school stuff that my dad used to listen to, like Sinatra, Nat King Cole,
yeah.
some of that stuff.
Sure.
I love it. I
yeah.
love it.
That's all good.
Good background music while you're eating dinner during
well,
the holidays.
If I go back, if you just say, okay, John, you're a little kid, what was the one Christmas song you hoped would come on the radio? This is it. I'm sorry, that is. And so then you say, okay, 45 years later, that song is still... I'm a kid again. I hear that and you go, well, that's a ridiculous song. It's just speeded up voices of chipmunks. Who wants to listen to that? I do. That's who wants to listen to that. That's me hoping that I get a slot car set or a bicycle or Army Men. Oh, I wanted some Army Men.
You know who loves Christmas music, I think, more than anybody at the station? Is Violetta Podramatic. She starts listening, I think, in June or July. I'm telling you, she goes nuts.
She is work.
Yeah, next time you run into her, she'll give you a whole rundown of what she likes to listen to.
Well, I'll be sure not to ask.
Might be your best bet.
Play one more for us, Elif. Do you have another one that you can play for us? Just kind of, these are the suggestions that have come in on my Facebook page. I'm King John there, and we're looking for something to feature on our Christmas special.
Go, there's no
there you go.
Place like home for
go to Kevin's house. This is in the background right now.
Because no matter how far away you roam, if you want to be happy.
Speaking of which, if you go to my Facebook page, you'll also find next to the Christmas post our Salvation Army kettle. We're asking you how much money can we raise? We're trying to get to $10,000. Elif, what's the total in my virtual kettle?
$2,435, John.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, but hey, Elif, how much more is that than we had yesterday?
$10, John.
Ten.
All right, where do I go? I'm going to donate. John.
Just go to. Thank you. Really, if it's just ten, whoever that person is that gave us ten, that's better than what we had. So just go to Facebook.com. I'm King John. There, you'll see the post with the holiday albums. And then just below or above that, just scroll down, you'll see. Actually, we have a new video of me taking on the World Backgammon Champion. That was a lot of fun.
What?
There's a video of me playing backgammon against the World Backgammon Champion, who's a Chicago guy. And I kicked his ass in the one we didn't video. And then there's another video. And then there's the link to my Salvation Army kettle, the virtual kettle there. So if you just whip out your credit card, you can make a donation. Okay, so Kevin and Violetta and those other two people, Anna and Ro, in the studio next. Ro Khan, Anna DeVlantis in the studio. Hi, guys.
I like the fact that we're talking about March in your commercial.
That makes helps a little bit.
Mm-hmm. You can see it on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, you know, you're still getting your money back through March.
Which can't be that
March,
long far away.
Right,
yeah,
if it's right. March,
yeah.
Well, you know. You don't want to give them a year. You give them, you know, so it's like right around the corner.
It's comforting after a 35-degree temperature drop to sort of think about March.
That's the worst. 35-mile-an-hour winds.
Yeah,
holy
that's another
cow.
I know. Issue.
Was it like a crazy racket at your place last night? I heard the wind howling.
Me too. I'm on the fourth floor. I've never heard that kind of wind. It felt like I was on the 44th floor.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy last night.
I was scared.
I know. I was too. I was like, what is going on?
Here's the thing about Sarah Sanders. You can say that we don't like... that it's up to the people of Alabama to decide, which is the new take on that.
Yes.
But I just wish they, but then don't endorse him. If you're going to let the people decide, then don't help one side or the other. Stand back.
That's the point I was just making before broadcast. We were walking over to Starbucks, and I'm saying the same thing. Why would the party get behind a candidate like this when many members of the party leadership amongst the party has said, these are not the principles we stand for. I would ask him to step aside. He doesn't. And he gets rewarded with money.
Well, he doesn't. And then they think he's going to win. So now they're throwing in with him.
Right.
And
they don't need him breaking bad on him once he gets there.
They don't think that we are paying attention to that detail. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, the president wants to be able to call him into the office and go, hey, pal, listen, I supported you.
I do everything I tell
my
you.
My own political risk. So you're now going to be with me. It's going to be like that scene from Network.
And in that scene, does Roy Moore have his cowboy hat and his cap gun? And his cowboy boots. And his
I don't think he can wave the. Can he wave the gun around in the Senate? Around the wall of the Senate? Are you allowed to do that? Is that concealed carry zone? That's the funny thing about this whole Roy Moore thing. I think as Chicagoans and Northerners and Americans, we look at Roy Moore and you go, here's a guy twice thrown off the Supreme Court for disobeying federal laws. And this is all about him posting the Ten Commandments, which would seem to tilt the court toward a particular religious objective. And that's one of the things that the framers of the Constitution, which apparently the same people who were putting on the three-cornered hats back in 2009 and arguing about the Constitution, have taken off the three-cornered hats and, put on frocks of some sort. And this is what Roy Moore is doing here. He's wrapped himself in the Bible. Now, there was something else that happened in the Sarah Huckabee Sanders press conference today, which was she was asked about directly, pointedly, a question, and obviously an agended question, which is the president okay with a shopkeeper putting up a sign that says, we will not make wedding cakes for gay couples, because that's being heard by the Supreme Court? And she said, well, the president always stands for religious liberty, and that probably applies to that, so yes. And now, would it be okay to put up a sign that says, I will not serve Christians? I will not serve Jews. I will not serve Muslims. I will not serve. I mean, is that because that's religious liberty, right?
Sure.
If my religion tells me that your religion is bad, I don't have to serve you, or I disagree with your religion.
How far does it go?
How far does that go? Right. And that's what the Supreme Court is going to have to answer here. That's the question of the people defending.
Yeah.
So
I don't have to answer these questions, right?
No. Luckily, we don't have to
answer
this.
That's where we stand in America right now.
Well, I have two beautiful cakes that
were delivered here.
No, they are not for you.
Oh.
Thank you very much. No, not so much.
Who's going to eat them?
They look delicious, though.
I'm going to serve them to family and friends on Saturday or
Sunday. We're not friends? What happened?
Friends?
What happened?
Not as much as these other people, as it turns out.
No.
So I'm pretty much taking
So we just get
home.
To look at the cake.
What is that cake?
Take a look at my delicious
German
cakes.
Chocolate from Angelica's and Hazelcrest. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So goodbye.
Goodbye. When are they sending those to us? This is Chicago's very own 720.
When you send them your credit card.
WGN. Damn it. WGNradio.com. Violetta, send them my credit card.
I'm on it.